You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. The long-running legal battle over how Delaware picks judges for some of its courts appears to be over. After 5 years and two separate cases, the tussle over the state's judicial balance provisions involving Wilmington lawyer James Adams and Governor John Carney ends with a consent decree where the Carney administration concedes part of Delaware's rules for filling seats on its top three courts is unconstitutional. Adams, who is politically unaffiliated, challenged the state's major party provision. That requires applicants for seats on the Supreme Court, Superior Court, and Court of Chancery to be from one of the two major parties, Democratic or Republican. Adams' first challenge failed when the U.S. Supreme Court decided he lacked standing. But a federal judge ruled last fall that new facts presented in Adams' second challenge established legal standing to move forward, and a trial was set for April. The consent decree does leave the state's bare majority provision intact. That says no more than a bare majority of judges on those courts can be affiliated with a single political party. So why did the Carney administration move to settle the dispute now? And what does this move mean for how the state appoints judges going forward? Constitutional law scholar Alan Garfield, a professor at Widener University's Delaware Law School, joins us this week to offer some answers. Can you tell us a little bit about what this consent decree says and what it does?
Yes. So the Delaware Constitution had set up the appointment process for some courts. So there was two parts of the puzzle. One part, we'll just take the Delaware Supreme Court, was of the five positions, only three could be of one major political party, and the other two had to be part of the other major political party. And that prevented someone who is not a member of either political party, major political party, from being able to be appointed to the court, like James Adams. And the consent decree basically says that the second part, the other major political party for the other two seats on the court, you know, is no longer good law. So it just left in the bare majority provision that three seats could be for just one party, but the other two seats could be for a member of any party.
Or someone who is non-affiliated whatsoever.
Right.
So we'll start with the basic thing is we're assuming this is kind of the end of the road for this case. I'll put it directly to you. Does this definitively put an end to this case, which has dragged on for about 5 years and, as we mentioned, the top two challenges by Wilmington lawyer James Adams, who is trying to apply for positions and did not have a major party affiliation? Is this the end?
Well, I think it's the end in terms of, I think James Adams agrees he's not going to bring any more challenges. I suppose somebody else could come and challenge the bare majority provision. But it looks like for now, you know, things are probably going to stay this way.
Is it fair to say that the state, by going this route, doing a consent decree, kind of saw the writing on the wall? It only won in the U.S. Supreme Court in the first case based on standing. And it appears to me, as I recall, all the other rulings seem to indicate that the major party piece of this process wasn't faring very well with judges. Did the state just say, like, you know what, we're probably going to lose, so we might as well cut bait?
I'm assuming that's what their reasoning was, that in the Third Circuit, as you said, in the district court in the Third Circuit, they lost, that they found not only, you know, they first said the other major political party provision is not constitutional. And then they said, and you can't sever the two. They were intended to be a package. And so they lost on both provisions. And maybe seeing the writing on the wall, as you said, they said, you know what, let's at least keep the bare majority provision, which we think is a good thing, and we'll surrender the other provision. That, you know, better to have that resolution, get rid of this lawsuit, than potentially lose both.
I was going to say, you mentioned the severability issue, and the consent decree does speak specifically to the bare majority rule, and essentially is saying that the parties in this case affirm it, that it's okay, it can stand. Now, Adams' lawyer had said that Carney and the state had asked for this specifically, and he suggested it was political cover so it wouldn't look like a total loss. But it sounds like you're suggesting that there was actually a practical reason to add that, and that is to maybe inoculate against further challenges to the thing that's standing, which is the bare majority rule.
Yeah, I'm not sure other people couldn't challenge it, but I think what it does is you know, like you were saying, if he they're figuring we could potentially lose both provisions, we think the one provision is a good thing to have in the Constitution. Rather than risk losing both, let's keep this, and probably nobody else is going to challenge it, and we'll at least have preserved part of what we like in the process.
And there was, as I recall, back when this was working its way through the various levels, particularly when it got to the Supreme Court and there was a lot of amicus briefs filed, there was a lot of people who were in support of this system, particularly the bare majority piece. And a lot of people were arguing how important that bare majority piece was. Do you feel like that kind of, you know, factors in here, that there's a lot of people who see a lot of value if you can't have the major party one, making sure that that bare majority piece does survive?
Yeah, my guess is that was what people were thinking. And mind you, the bare majority provision goes back to, I think, the 19th century, where the other is from the 19th. The other major political party was from the 1950s. So they did have one without the other. And some Delaware courts only have the bare majority provision in it. So, you know, if it's looking like you might lose both, then maybe this is a wise decision on their part.
So,
which isn't to say they didn't lose something.
So with the major party rule gone and the bare majority rule still in place, do you see this having an impact on the dynamic of nominating judges? Would having a bench that looked like three Democrats, a Republican, and a non-affiliated person look, feel different? Do you see a practical impact here?
Well, I think the question is really to what extent the people involved in the appointment process. First of all, it's going to depend on, you know, who's governor, who's in the Senate, you know, are they the same political party or not? It has opened up the door to have more kind of partisan, you know, appointment process, you know, like in the Court of Appeals, when it said, well, the two provisions go in tandem, is you could have three Democrats on the court. And if you have a Democrat Senate and a Democrat governor, say, and now I'll appoint two Green Party to the other. So the whole court could lean to the left. Whereas the other major political party provision, you know, was basically trying to make sure we kept that kind of balance, which, you know, I think there's a good argument was a beneficial thing. So potentially now, you know, if people want to follow the Delaware way and try to be balanced and be inclusive, I would imagine that in practice, things might not change so much. And even if you have some, you know, smaller parties, they might be, you know, James Adams for a long time was a Democrat, you know, mm-hmm. He might be put into, if there's three Republicans, a Democrat seat or something. So my guess is it probably is not going to dramatically alter things, but it leaves the door open at least.
There is a little loophole there, you're saying.
Yeah, well, sure.
The last question for you is, do you think that this might lead to an opening of the door for non-affiliated or minor party affiliated people to seek these appointments? Or it sounds like you're saying that it's probably could have stayed the same, but do you think there's a possibility that it does, in fact, do what Adams has kind of argued, which is kind of like open it up a little bit more than it is right now?
Well, I mean, by definition, it does, because the way it was structured is if you were not a member of one of the two major political parties, you couldn't qualify, you know, for some of these judicial seats. That was James Adams' claim. He was basically saying, I am being discriminated against because I don't affiliate with the Republicans or the Democrats, and that violates my First Amendment right to associate with a political party, and that you're penalizing me. You know, you are like the new Democratic sheriff in the lead case who came in office and say, who's Republican? You're fired, right? Now, the truth is it wasn't exactly the equivalent. In some ways, the Delaware Constitution is the opposite, because it was restraining the governor from just saying, I could only have my people on the court. You know, he had to pick people from the other party. So I just add this, you know, part of me feels like Delaware did lose something good in giving up the other major political party. Like I said, it does at least open the door to having a situation where you have three Democrats and then they appoint two Green Party people. So the whole court slants in one direction, whereas the other way, it assured that you have a balance between the two major political parties. And there's something to be said for balance. I think on the United States Supreme Court, when we had a more balanced court, you know, balanced on either side with O'Connor and Kennedy being swing votes, in many ways, I think the decisions that came out of the court were consonant with where the American public was. And we just saw recently, by happenstance because of politics, where there was a sharp shift in the court in one partisan direction. And I think we've already seen the court producing decisions that are kind of out of kilter, out of line with where a lot of Americans are. So, you know, Delaware may have been on to something good there, and it may be, you know, unfortunate, even if perhaps they felt their hands were tied, you know, that they gave part of it up.
Thanks to Widener University Delaware Law School Professor Alan Garfield for his time on The Green this week. And as Black History Month begins, we look at how the country recognizes Black history and where it comes up short in understanding its significance. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.